Orphans in Waiting by Wally K. Daly. Episode 5. Sunday, AM.
It was my nightmare. I was inside the nightmare I'd had on the morning this whole thing began. The difference was, this wasn't nightmare. It was worse than nightmare. This was real. I was in a plane, flying at speed with a bunch of vicious-looking villains who'd kidnapped me and my younger brother, Pete. Two other planes, sitting dead on our wingtips, one on either side, were riddling us with machine gun fire. Everybody in our plane was screaming with fear, including Peter beside me. And no wonder.
Mike! Help me!
Our plane, obviously hit, was plummeting through the night sky, heading to crash into land hidden in the blackness below. But worst of all for me was, same as in the original nightmare, inside my head, Janie was screaming as well. And that didn't make any sort of sense at all, because Janie wasn't even in the plane with us. She was safe at home.
It must be pretty horrible to die at the best of times. But to die alone, locked in a cubicle at the back of a crashing aeroplane, must be about the loneliest death of all. To be honest, I'd have got up and joined Mike and Pete in the front. If you're going to die, die holding hands with family. But the pressure was too great. I couldn't move. Too great even to scream, except inside my head, where I screamed and screamed and screamed, never guessing. But once again, like the time I was drowning, Mike could actually hear me.
I tried to blank out the craziness of Jamie's screaming, as I remembered an even more bizarre thing about my previous nightmare. When I'd looked up in the dream, the pilot had been smiling. I looked quickly to Vakal, our pilot, and according to Pete, our secret friend. And yes, he too was smiling.
I don't want to die, Mike. I don't want to die.
Don't worry. Look at Vakal.
What?
Look at the pilot.
He's smiling.
Exactly. You don't smile like that when you're going to die, Pete. He knows something we don't.
The machine gun from the other two planes cut off dead at the same second that our plane seemed to dip sharply, then level out and slowed a little. And the quiet was amazing. I scrambled up to look out of the cupboard window. And what I saw was just as terrifying, if not more so. The wingtip of the plane was only feet away from rock and bracken, and we were flying past them at hundreds of miles an hour. Vakal was obviously flying us down the center of a gorge or something.
Ladies and gentlemen, there will now be a short intermission until the shooting starts once more.
What is going on here, Vakal? All this firing. We should be crushed and dead by now.
What is going on here is hopefully a bluff. So far, they've only been firing above us, trying to push us down. I've been happy to oblige by going down, because I knew where I wanted to go for a little temporary peace and quiet.
Where are we?
They're cutting through these mountains to the sea. They can't get down into this gorge without risking their own lives as well as ours. So, they'll be using the time to ask the powers that be whether they should let us go free or finish the job and shoot us down.
And the reply?
Who can tell? Hey, prisoners!
Yes?
If the choice was yours, would you shoot down the plane to get rid of the bad guys, even though you'd die as well?
No!
Do not overstep the mark, Vakal. We are not bad men. Our cause is just. The taking of these children is a necessity. I will meet my maker when my time comes, with no fear in my heart whatsoever that he will condemn me for my actions here.
Well, stand by. If what I think is about to happen is about to happen, you may be meeting your maker much sooner than you think. Look ahead!
Mike, look!
No! About a mile or so away, etched against the light at the end of the gorge, was an airplane. It had raced ahead and turned back into the gorge and was obviously all set to come down the tunnel in the mountain directly at us. As it came towards us, gathering speed, the second plane appeared behind it, slightly lower than the first, and that too was racing towards us.
My apologies all. They're coming at full speed, hoping to finally push me down. I have no wish to spend the next 25 years or so of my life in jail for kidnapping. and therefore have no choice other than not to give way. So, I am going to close my eyes now and leave the decision as to whether we are to crash and die or not up to the other two pilots.
He's done it! He's closed his eyes!
Yeah, let's do the same, Pete.
Okay, see you, Mike.
See you. He's not been too bad a brother.
You have.
I watched as long as I could bear it. The plane came at us like a bullet. The pilot, obviously not knowing he was playing this game of grown-up chicken all by himself, kept going dead on course. I couldn't understand what was going on here. It really was.
Come on, Carly.
We don't care if we die, Star.
What are they playing at? What are they both playing at? No!
I was at the window when it happened. I was fascinated by how windy it was, watching it just skim the rocks and bracken. When suddenly, above that tip, another tip appeared for a fraction of a second and briefly touched the sidewall, just a graze. But it pulled it round to crash into the mountain and explode behind us. The shock was too much. I fainted. I finally came to after what seemed ages, to hear a voice nearby calling quietly, almost a whisper.
Jamie? Jamie, are you here?
Incredible.
It can't be. Jamie, I knew you must be here somewhere.
Why are you sitting here?
You'll give me away. I heard you scream.
I didn't make a sound.
I heard you inside my head, like before, when you were drowning. What are you doing here? You're supposed to be safe at home.
That cow brought me. I think he wants me to help get you both free. The others mustn't know I'm here, or they'll know he's a traitor as well.
I didn't tell anyone I was going looking for you except Pete. He thinks I've gone nuts with the excitement of it all. The rest think I've gone to the toilet opposite.
Well, keep it that way. Pete mustn't come back as well, or they'll smell a rat.
Okay.
What happened? How come we didn't crash?
The other planes did. The first one seemed to blow up. The second one flew straight into the debris and blew up as well. They fell in flames to the bottom of the gorge.
Are we safe now?
Yeah, we're outside British airspace, over the sea, well on our way.
On our way where?
Tripwire, as far as I can gather.
Wow! So it was true?
Yep, and we've got a granddad living out there.
I know. Great, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Look, Mike, go back to your seat. Pretend nothing's happened. The cow's going to go with you both when we land, to see where they take you, and then he'll come back to collect me.
She's a brilliant pilot. Saved our lives, I guess.
Pretty hot on the motorbike, too. Used to be with the circus. Bit of a dish as well.
Come on, Jamie. This is no time to go all girly on me.
Not going all girly. I'm just telling you he looks nice.
Forget all that junk till we're safe, okay?
Okay. You get back to your seat now before they get suspicious.
Right. And Jamie, take care.
I will. One other thing, Mike. Do you know you and Peter Princess?
That's bull. Grandad would have told me.
It's true. And I'm a princess. The cow told me.
No wonder you think he's a dish. What a dreadful lie. See you.
Shift your legs, Pete.
Let me through.
I'm trying to get some sleep. Way past my bedtime.
Oh, move it. Oh.
She's there.
So where you be?
Told you, toilet.
You took your time?
Upset stomach, went potty, but his sister was aboard.
Well, you got to admit, Skip Bonk fired me. Stop pushing me. I mean, voices in the head. I've done my history. I'll start calling you Joan of Arc legs. I was right. She's here. What? Keep it down. Come back. Bull. She's here.
I'll go say hello.
You can't. You give her away.
Find out you're lying, all right?
Sit down, Pete.
Excuse me, mister.
Yes?
I've got to go to the loo, too.
Well, quick about it. We both need some sleep.
I just settled down again, trying to get comfortable, when I heard the tap on the door.
Hello? Anyone at home?
No.
Jamie?
What?
Oh, steady. You'll damage me.
Don't be dumb.
damaged. I told Mark he mustn't come back.
He changed his mind. Thought it would stop me worrying.
Get back and don't say a word.
And would I do such a thing?
Go.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, she's not very happy with you, mind. Why didn't you tell me not to go and see her like she told you?
Okay, you two. What's going on?
Nothing. That's right.
You took your time? What's so interesting back there?
Just went to the toilet.
We'll see about that. I'll go and check.
Idiot! Now you've blown it!
Not necessarily. I'll tell Vakal.
Hey, you boy. Don't disturb the pilot while he's flying.
Vakal? Damn you, just gone to the back. Keep it, Jamie. Do something.
I said sit down.
Okay, sit back. Quickly.
Right.
Everybody sit immediately. Emergency. Major turbulence ahead. Everybody sit. Emergency. You in the back. Wait, you see them fucking up there. I might have to crash land.
The gangster rushed back to take his seat. And after that, every time anyone moved, Vakal invented turbulence. I don't think there was a spare sick bag to be had in the plane for love nor money. But when we did finally land and staggered off at the end of the journey into vicious sunshine, Janie was still safe and undiscovered.
I heard everybody leaving. Slowly, the temperature started to rise. I waited a long time, and then finally, really overheated, I opened the cubicle door and looked out to check the plane was empty. It was. I took a seat out there and waited for Vakal to return. I realized I was looking forward to him coming back. And it wasn't just because of his saving Mike and Pete. He was, well, really nice company, you know? Anyway, it's not being girly like Mike said when you think someone's good-looking. It's just growing up.
Just over here. Brilliant, Mike. Absolutely brilliant. He stopped, slapped in front of giant double doors with no other route available. I said,
hey, yo, this is how we're here. You're really going to get a function. You know that.
Oh, who'd have believed it? Such a lovely garden right in the middle of town.
Could be a little palace.
It is a palace. Headquarters of our leader, Masoud. We will go now inside the audience room to await him. You will kneel, and when he arrives, you bow until your head touches the floor.
I don't go in much for that kneeling and bowing stuff.
Shut it, Pete.
The choice is yours. Either side of him will stand his ceremonial sword bearers. In spite of how useful your presence may or may not be as a negotiating ploy with your grandfather, they will have no choice but to hold you down and chop your head off forthwith. If you do not bow until your head touches the floor.
I just mentioned. I don't go in for that sort of thing much.
Why don't you just shut up, Pete? You're talking too much. And I think in this place it could cost your life.
If you'd care to pay me off now, I'll be on my way.
So what's your hurry, pilot? You must first pay your respects to our leader, as must we all.
The deal was to get you safely here.
You think I carry 30,000 pounds in my pocket? Be patient.
30,000? That's not bad for a night's work. You sure he's on our side?
Quiet. Let us enter the palace.
I was soon too hot and too bored, and there was nothing to do except watch the planes come in and land and let their passengers off. I don't know how long it was before the first plane with British markings came in. It could have been hours for all I knew. The heat was getting to me, making me feel dizzy. The plane landed quite near, and soldiers went on board. I caught the feeling that maybe it was being checked to see if Mike and Pete were there. Finally, the troops left the plane, and the passengers started to straggle off. Then the cabin staff came out. I looked once, and then had to look again, because I didn't believe my eyes. I knew the man dressed in junior captain's uniform. I also knew one of the hostesses. She was perhaps the largest hostess I had ever seen in my life. It was the couple who had guarded us at home. Uncle Brian and Auntie Vi.
All near! His Highness Masoud the Great will arrive shortly.
Oh! Shut it, Pete!
My name!
Quiet! Inside the palace, it was beautiful. The furnishings were gold, the floor and walls marble. Fountains were tinkling everywhere, and there was a gold throne on a raised dais ahead. Gigantic ceremonial guards bearing scimitars stood on every doorway. It was just like a scene from 1001 Nights. But this was no fairy tale. This was for real.
Masud approaches. All bow heads and touch to the marble of the floor.
I did so. The gong sounded again. I heard the giant doors at the back of the dais open, and the leader was obviously there, crossing to sit on his golden throne.
All hail, Masud, our gracious ruler.
All hail!
He's only a young kid, Mike.
Oh, no. I might have guessed it. Pete was peeping.
The room, you noticed, has an echo, and my hearing is acute. You are an offensive little wimp. Attend to him, guards. Others take hold of the second prisoner in case he protests.
Two of the door guards dashed to hold me as one of Masood's giant bodyguards crossed and put his foot on Pete's back, pressing him to the floor and pulling his hair to stretch his neck up. The second bodyguard had followed and now lifted his scimitar, all ready to slash it down.
No! Don't let them do it, Masood! It's barbarous!
Hold! You are older and should know better, but are equally offensive.
They were both warned, Your Highness.
So, you were warned. What do you have to say for yourselves that would stop me from taking just retribution for your ill manners and permitting my sword bearers to chop your worthless heads from your worthless bodies this instant?
Masood was an obvious nut. Probably was head boy at his public school. There's only one answer to that sort of megalomaniac. Play the game their way.
I speak first for my brother. Yes, he is only a child. His tongue is very loose and always has been. For me, I have been taught from childhood one must defend one's younger brother. So I ask your forgiveness on both our behalves. We have not as yet learnt how to bear ourselves as princes should. Your Highness, forgive us.
Princess, literally, shut up!
So, you know you're a prince?
I only found out today. Please find it in your heart to forgive any impropriety in our speech or actions until we learn your ways better. If a head is required in retribution, take mine. I could not bear to live, having failed to protect my charge.
That's thinking, Mike.
You speak well for a youngster. For the time being, you are both forgiven. Release them, guards. Best you both watch your mouths from here on out, or soon perhaps you won't have mouths to watch. My warriors, you have all done well to bring these two captives from dangerous foreign lands. Go through to the inner courtyard where my treasurer awaits. 1,000,000 in gold coin, as promised, is there to be divided equally among you.
The pilot, Your Highness?
Oh, yes. Vakal, I believe, is the name.
That is right. Vakal.
I also hear you will not join my merry band.
I'm just a pirate, Your Highness. I don't take sides in the struggle. Never have done. I'm simply the pilot.
For all sides and those in the middle. Be aware, Vakal, the time fast approaches when all must take sides.
Yes, Your Highness.
For now you have done well. Go through to where the treasurer awaits with your £30,000.
Very good.
Probably not the time to mention it, Your Highness. But, you know, I did have to lay out 50p for our bus fares home from school.
Pete, shut it!
I must have fallen asleep looking out the plane's window. It was over 36 hours that we'd all been on the go without having been anywhere near a bed. I was shattered. I didn't hear the door to the aircraft open. Didn't hear the person slowly walking along the aisle toward me. The first thing I was aware of was a cool breeze on my brow. The person was blowing on my forehead. I immediately started dreaming of Mum, when a hand touched me on the shoulder.
Help! Don't scream. It's me.
I recovered from my shock, and Vakal, seeing I wasn't going to scream, took his hand away. He changed out of his English clothes and was now in a long white gown. He looked great.
Sorry it took so long. I got held up.
And then I had to go organize a safe room for us.
That's not indeed.
They're at the palace of a ruler called Masood. They're safe for the moment, but we're going to have to get them out of there. And it's not going to be easy. Here, put these on.
He brought me the female version of the outfit that he was wearing, but in black. He turned his back while I slipped out of my clothes and put them on. They were wonderfully cool. Vakal was talking on.
If anyone speaks to you in the street, you are to point to your mouth and your ears, indicating that you're deaf and dumb. Okay?
Okay. What about this head thing?
Put that on as well. The band slips over your ears.
Okay.
The rest covers your mouth, nose and forehead.
I'd often seen Taragrad women wearing headgear like that on television. It made me feel sort of safe. Only my eyes peeping out, and no chance of being recognized. Very mysterious looking as well.
Ready?
Yes.
That really suits you.
Thanks very much.
So, did anything happen while I was away? Did anyone try to come aboard?
No. Oh, there was one thing. Uncle Brian and Auntie Vi are in town.
What?
I saw them arrive off a flight some time back.
That's not good news.
Why?
They'll be trying to get their hands on Mike and Pete as well. We've got to make sure we get you all safe together first.
What about Mommy and Daddy?
They'll be here in town somewhere. The difficulty is going to be to get through the ranks to find them.
Ranks?
You've got to understand it, Jeannie. Though you can't hear any gunfire at the moment, there is a war going on here. Once there were dozens of factions, but now, through battles and amalgamation, there are only two main groups left, plus a small freelance bunch. One group, perhaps still the most powerful, is controlled by Masood. The other, a consortium of all remaining factions, is run by your grandfather. Masood and your grandfather are sworn enemies, and you, Mike and Pete, are the pigs in the middle.
Why?
While Masood controls your grandchildren, he controls your grandfather. Apart from your mother and father, you are the heirs to the kingdom. And his kingdom is vast. That's why you must not fall into the hands of Masood as well.
But the kidnappers didn't even want to take me with them.
Because it's a man's world out here, and you'd be in the way. And you are safe in England. He could have had you killed there any time if need be. If he gets to know you're here and could be saved by your grandfather, he will want you captive as well. Ready to go?
Yes. One thing, Vakal. I was having a dream. Something came back to me. Who was the hyena?
What do you know of hyena?
There was a note about him in the bureau at home. Beware the hyena. Brian said he was the most dangerous man in the world.
Hyena is the freelance killer who will do anything if the price is right. You must pray that nobody employs him to come searching for you, or your lives are as good as lost.
How would we know him?
You would know him because he will tell you at the end. The only time his name is mentioned is as he kills. And then he leaves his trademark behind to claim the bloodbath for himself.
Trademark?
That's right. Hyena. Written in his victim's blood on the nearest wall or floor. He is surely a madman.
Masood realized we hadn't eaten and took us to a dining area and provided food. And we ate squatting on silk cushions while we talked about cricket and things. Pete, as usual, ate like a pig, even though it was all dodgy stuff. He particularly enjoyed some round, chewy things about the size of bullseyes that squelched when he bit them, very sweet inside. I didn't tell him that though they were the size of bullseyes, they were actually goat's eyes. Not till he finished eating them all, that is. While Pete went off to be sick, Masood finally told me what it was all about.
You see, your grandfather wants peace in Tarigwad.
Is that such a bad thing after all these years? I mean, I don't know much about it, but this war seems to have been going on forever. There's always something about it on the news.
There can be no peace until I am revenged against him.
Revenged for what?
Many factions joined your grandfather over the last few years. He was growing steadily more powerful. My father wouldn't join him. There is a family feud that goes back hundreds of years. Because my father wouldn't join the growing consortium, he was killed by an assassin. A man in my father's employ, but secretly employed by your grandfather.
How can you know it was grandfather?
Because the assassin was caught red-handed and confessed. With my father's death, your grandfather thought our tribe was finished. But I was called back from university to take command. Now we have you two captive, and the battle is all but won. A messenger has been sent to your grandfather, and soon my goods will be returned.
Goods?
Do you know nothing? My hostages. I had five hostages in my care. American, French, German, and two Englishmen. Your grandfather raided our headquarters last week and stole them. I want them back. If I don't get them back, you both die. Interestingly enough, one of the Englishmen was your father's brother, Geoffrey.
What?
Ah, your brother returns, still looking a little pale.
You rotter, Mike. I'll get even with you for this.
Just to cheer you up a bit, Pete. You might like to know we've got a real uncle as well.
What?
That's right. Uncle Geoffrey, Dad's brother.
Woo! A granddad and an uncle. That's a bad day's work, really. Go on like this and we'll have a proper family in no time.
Vakal took me to an apartment overlooking a very large hotel. The apartment was a nice place. Clean. And it had air conditioning, so it was cool. Enough bedrooms for all four of us if he managed to get Mike and Pete back. He left me there, saying he had business to do. He told me not to answer the door, and on no condition to use or answer the phone. Well, I couldn't think who I could call in any case. And if I answered it, I couldn't speak the language, so I saw no danger of that. How wrong can one be? The moment that Vakal left the room, it started ringing. And it rang. And it rang. And it rang.
I told Masood, Pete really must get some sleep. So he had the guard take us to our room. We went inside, and the guard stood outside, guarding. It was small and neat, with a window high on the front wall, a side table, and just two beds.
I'm shattered.
Hang on, Pete. Let's just spy out the lie of the land first. Come and stand on my shoulders and look out of the window.
No time for acrobatics. I'm dead. Pull the table over.
Sit yourself.
And it rang. And it rang. And it rang.
Make a noise, then. I'm trying to get some sleep.
Pete! Come here, quick. This is serious.
I know you're winding me up. Tell me when I wake.
And rang. And rang. And rang some more.
Villainous-looking men surrounding the palace. And there's a couple of guards lying in the courtyard, bleeding from their throats. They're obviously dead. The men have all got guns. I'm through the main gates now. Bigger guns rolling in. Vakal's with them. He's obviously the leader.
Good night, Mike. See you in about a week.
I put my fingers in my ears. Walked to the window trying to escape the noise. And there, standing outside the hotel opposite, dressed in Paraguayan costume, no mistaking who it was, Uncle Brian. The phone went on ringing. It was driving me crazy.
Pete! Some of the big guns are being pointed up here!
You know, Mike, you can get an award for the worst overacting in the world.
I knew I'd finally have to answer it. And finally, I did. The voice at the other end just spoke one word, and the word sent me cold with fear.
Hyena. Hyena.
Hyena knew we were here. He was on our trail.
Pete, take cover. They're going to fire.
Oh, my God.
In Wally K. Daly's Orphans in Waiting, Judy Bennett was Mike, Abigail Doherty, Janie, and Simon Radford, Peter. Amajit Jew was Masood, and Tariq Alibi, Vakal. The gang leader and his accomplice were Tony Redden and Buska. The producer was Dan Garrett.